Good afternoon. You're listening to Verum Sports, and now it is going to be the afternoon after the morning before, where the Rugby World Cup semi-final, the first one featuring England, is now put to bed. However, right now, slipping back, playing with your minds and time travelling, Doctor Who style, it's a bit of predictions, and we'll see how they pan out. It's a real honour, this one. She's been an icon for Verum Sports in recent past. She was in contention for England Women's Player of the Year, Grand Slam winning England, no less, Saracen's star and coach of the old Albanian ladies. It's the awesome Sarah McKenna. How you doing, Sarah?
Yeah, really good, thank you, Tony.
Hey, perfect. Well, real quickly, as I say, we'll unpack this small tournament reaching the semi-finals out in the Far East in just a second. But last we spoke, you were jubilant because obviously England in the women's rugby claimed a Grand Slam, which is always awesome. And you were preparing for a trip to the States for the USA Super Series, where I think, again, you did very well, not quite able to overcome all and sundry. I think a pesky New Zealand side gave you your first taste of the defeat for a while. But all in, Sarah, when you look back on, I guess, calendar year 2019, not a bad one for your good self, generally.
Yeah, for personal reasons, it was a great year. It felt like a really long season. So we finished the season with that summer tour with England, a combination of sort of all the hard work we'd done that year, having had Autumn International Six Nations thing, going away on tour playing the four best teams in the world. So that tournament was a big one, and a big one to finish on. And like you said, we just fell at that last hurdle against New Zealand, but certainly a lot of learnings along the way.
And ultimately, that's what it's all about. And I think the shoots of massive, massive, exciting times for the England Women Programme. I read a really fascinating article that you were featured in with Saracens, where you said, look, you know what? I'm almost getting tired of this kind of, oh, England women's rugby's improving and blah, blah, blah. We want to be judged objectively. This is what we do. We're really good. And I thought that was very refreshing. And my point, though, is very simple. Women's rugby's on the up and up. At the end of the day, first year of professionalism, Grand Slam shows what's possible, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, we weren't professional at the beginning of this year. And probably when we went into the Six Nations, the work that had been done over those couple of months that we had been professional didn't come to fruition just yet. But, you know, like you said, those shoots were being, being planted and digging deep roots. But so I think once we got that summer tour, you know, we put in a lot of work, the fitness side of things and the benefits of being professional, those foundations had been laid down. So I think having sort of been 7 or 8 months professional now, starting the 2019-20 season with the club and then going into autumn, I think all the players who are professional are feeling so much better for it. And, you know, we're looking to push the game on, not only domestically but internationally.
Yeah, absolutely, Sarah. You are certainly an ambassador for that. You mentioned there, of course, the only kind of defeat for you guys last year was New Zealand. England rugby men collide with the All Blacks on Saturday. It's going to be a formidable, mouth-watering occasion. They've played New Zealand three times in Rugby World Cup history without yet winning. They've only got one victory in the last 17 against the All Blacks. But you know yourself, don't you? Now, all of that history is irrelevant. It's how the players manage themselves, play the occasion, do their own jobs, and then, I guess, may the best team win.
Yeah, I think what goes before is sort of, you know, a nil point at this moment in the World Cup. You know, the two, I'd arguably say, the two best informed sides at this World Cup are meeting at the semi-final. So, yeah, like you said, it's going to be mouth-watering. Both teams have shown what they can do. They've both got the skills, the players, you know, the preparation, the depth to combat one another. But it's who comes out, you know, on the day, who battles the elements. And I've heard it's going to be a bit of a rainy one at Yokohama. So it's which team, I guess, combats that on the day. I'd say probably looking at a little bit of history, England have looked fantastic at times. But, you know, like in that Scotland game in the Six Nations, they can just have a tendency to capitulate at times, whereas New Zealand seem to have that consistency, throughout their reign. So, yeah, let's hope England hold their nerve, but, it's going to be mouth-watering all the same.
I'm so excited about that. I know that the eyes of the rugby world and indeed the sporting world are going to be on Yokohama over this weekend. 80 minutes away from the final. So just talk to me about the specific pressures of a semi-final. Are they unique compared to a major final?
I think so. You know, the players will definitely try and downplay it and the management will. I think Eddie Jones mentioned this week that when they looked ahead at the games that they were going to face 2 years ago when that draw took place, that they predicted they were going to meet New Zealand at this stage. So, you know, they would have been planning for 2 years for this moment. And obviously over that time, the staff will try and, you know, downplay each game. And players will always say that they're just playing one game at a time, only looking that one game forward. But, yeah, of course, you've got those players who are going to be nervous. But I think what plays on England's side is that they've got so many young players, so many players who haven't been, you know, at moments like this before. I think it actually, you know, plays in their hands. It doesn't work against them. I think when you've got older players who have perhaps faced defeat before, you know, they hold on to elements of that, memories of that, and sometimes they just can't shake it. But I think what's perfect about this England side is, you know, they're ambitious, they're young, and they're thirsty, you know, for everything. They want to go get everything. They're hungry. So I think that's actually a really strong element that England have, that sort of inexperience, perhaps that absolute inexperience that they can bring, and just that hunger that perhaps older players might not have and have been beaten before and a little bit hurt from that.
Do you know, I think that's a really fascinating point, Sarah. I'm going to add to it, though, and kind of compound it and say, the thing that's chiefly impressed me about this England movement throughout the World Cup, as they pace themselves, I think, very, very well, is that allied to that kind of youthful element of almost being devoid of fear, is a strong element of maturity. Itoje leads the tournament in takeaways, steals, with 7. But, you know, often one of the only black marks against his phenomenal name as he's grown leaps and bounds is that he was prone to maybe overindulgence at the ruck area, getting carded consistently. The England team are the only team amongst all 4 semi-finalists without anybody being binned, which I think is absolutely remarkable and reflects maturity and discipline. Here's the thing, both of those are going to need to be at the fore if they've going to conquer this firecracking New Zealand team over 80 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you spoke about Itoje, but you've got all the key players in the right positions that have got that experience. And I think you've, like we mentioned, that youth. You've got the players who you want to be excitable, aggressive at the breakdown, you know, with that age on their side. And like you said, that sort of youthful inexperience. So you've got Simmons and Curry being absolute nightmares at the breakdown, probably allowing Itoje to sort of play that game in those wider channels, allowing those two boys to get over the ball where they need to most. So, like you said, Itoje was getting pinged quite a lot out of the breakdown, just probably looking a little bit too much and wanting the ball back. That boy wants the ball in his hands more than anything. So I think, you know, you're leaving the right two to the job to get that ball in those tight channels, and then Itoje can play that game a little bit wider.
I tell you what, the battle of breakground, the breakdown is going to be a real dogfest, isn't it? I'm very intrigued by New Zealand's decision to bring in Scott Barrett to blindside. Great rugby player, great, great heritage, goodness me. His brother's going to feature, a 2-time World Player of the Year in Bowden Barrett, and the whole clan Barrett, world-class players. My point as it pertains to Scott, though, is that tendency to be a lock, a second row. Bringing in there at this Battle of the Dogfight, I wonder if that's there to try to intimidate maybe the lighter, more rugged England pair, be devastating at the breakdown. I'm fascinated to see how that breaks down, and I tell you what, it really could well be when it's all finished, when we all look back, where the game was won and indeed lost.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, bringing him, who's usually a lock, you're looking at having an extra line-out option, and I think somewhere where England really capitalised in that autumn internationals a year ago, where they came so close to beating New Zealand, was their kicking game and hitting those kicks to touch, finding that territory, and and keeping New Zealand pinned in their 22 at Twickenham, I think was key to England's, well, almost success in that game. I think, you know, New Zealand know that line-out's going to be key at the weekend, so perhaps that's the reason why they've selected three locks who can all jump and be options in that line-out, whereas England just have two in Laws and Otoji, but perhaps Curry will be going up there as well. So I think, you know, maybe that just goes to show that England are more of an assertive kicking team and will be looking to use that platform a little bit more.
Again, it's getting down to the point where all the talk becomes irrelevant. It's such a big game. England bidding for their first Rugby World Cup title since 2003. New Zealand unbeaten in 18 matches. A big, big day on top of a big, big occasion for Saracens' Billy Vunipola, going to make his 50th cap. What a player he is. And allied with the power of his brother, they really do pack a mega 1-2 kind of a combination, don't they?
Yeah, they're aren't they unbelievable? They're fantastic. What assets they are for England and for Saracens, of course. But yeah, Billy's been clocking up a fair few minutes over the season, and you know it's been well documented that there's nothing he likes more than getting those minutes on the pitch and just being out there playing rugby. You know, putting all that talk behind him. So I think he's that one who sort of ignores the talk and gets on with the job at hand. And Mako's, you know, obviously made that fantastic return from injury and last week played 70 minutes, which just goes to show probably that he is in a good place and he's going to be totally ready for this semi-final.
I'll tell you what, I'm sure they are. I'm sure everybody is. Sarah, we'll chat briefly about Wales, then look to have a brief conversation about the Saracens ladies' unbeaten start to the Tyrrells Premiership. But just quickly, it's the big one. It's 80 minutes from the final, England, New Zealand, Saturday morning. Your prediction, please.
I think it's going to be a close one, definitely a one-try game. But you know what? I want to give England the edge so much. So I'm going to go with it. I'm going to commit to England. Yeah, perhaps a little bit of heart overhead there, but no, I think they've got all the ingredients needed. And I think those boys are going to be firing. I think they've never looked better, certainly for about 8 years now. So I think I'm going to go with our boys this time.
Tell you what, I love it. And again, you can make a great case for both teams. As you rightly say, they are probably 1-2 in World Rugby, colliding on Saturday, one game away from the final. Goodness me. Then, on Sunday, the action carries on apace. Wales versus South Africa. Wales bidding for their first Rugby World Cup final appearance. South Africa two-time champs. A few injury worries, though, for this Welsh side. Navidi out in the ever-crucial back row, as we unpacked when we discussed England's chances, although Ross Moriarty's replacement is a mighty fine test match player. Halfpenny, another man with 80-plus caps, inclusive of Lions, comes in at fullback for the injured Sarri, Liam Williams. They're big blows, but their Welsh squad is the difference, I think, from this this kind of version of Wales than it's been at any Rugby World Cup in my living memory.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They look fantastic. You know, they've looked fantastic for a good 2 years now, and they've been playing excellent rugby. I think, you know, Gatland's made an incredible team out of them, and they just know how to win games. And I suppose there have been times during this World Cup when they've looked less than convincing, but they've pulled through it on all occasions. And, you know, that's what an excellent team does. They know when to win and how to win at those crucial times. I think probably a little bit like the All Blacks of days gone by, where, you know, you'd never write them off no matter what the deficit and score. And that's what makes a good World Cup winning team. You know, it's not going to win you games outside of the World Cup, but that's just what you need to do during a World Cup. Perhaps it's just winning a game by a point, but it's about accumulating those points and getting through to vital moments like this. And certainly that's what they've done. I think they've played slightly within themselves, but you know, if that gets them to the final, if that gets them lifting the trophy, then they're going to be more than happy with that.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, if it were to be Wales lifting the trophy in a fortnight's time, maybe one of the greatest players of this generation will be the man to hold it aloft. The man that is Alan Wynne-Jones, over 130 caps. I recall Martin Johnson and his kind of stoicism, and they're cut from the same cloth. Basically, warriors, mighty fine rugby players, and you would follow them into any trench, wouldn't you?
Yeah, isn't he a fantastic guy? And I think on and off the pitch, he's got so much respect, and I think the way he's playing, he's playing fantastic rugby, and he's like matured so much in terms of that role that he's got. I think he's as relevant of a player as ever. You know, he doesn't look tired. His skills don't look below par, or there aren't any young kids, you know, coming up and challenging. And I think, you know, that's not just because he's an excellent player, but that's his leadership skills that set him apart from, you know, the rest of the team too. So I think, you know, that the guy's incredible. And then I don't know if he's announced any retirement after this World Cup, but it looks like he's going for, you know, a good few years. But I'm sure his body's telling him different things.
Got to be said, though, as iconic as he is, this is also a mighty fine South African team. Obviously, they lost to New Zealand in the group stages, but let's not forget, they won their the Nations Cup down in New Zealand and Australia, the almost equivalent of the Southern Hemisphere's Six Nations, and coming on form, and their back three of Larumma, Pepe and Kobe as deadly as anybody. Wales have got to be careful with their kicking, loose kicking. I know it's likely to be wet, but these guys can strike, can't they?
Yeah, they've been devastating. I mean, striking fear into most oppositions in front of them, and you know, you could just make a highlight reel for the whole cup, whole World Cup, just of that back three. So yeah, they're absolutely devastating when they're ball in hand. But I know that Wales aren't going to be, like you said, kicking as loosely as they have been. And you know, what we want to see is them Wales running the ball a little bit more, which I dare say might not happen, obviously, with those injuries that have occurred. But it certainly sets up for a few challenges that Wales are going to face. But I'm sure they're going to have a few tricks up their sleeves, as they always do.
Got a feeling this is going to be another tight affair. You can, again, argue both ways. Two teams with little between them on paper. Once again, Sarah, your prediction for the team that will be representing the finalist against England, you predict, in the first semi-final. What's your thoughts? Wales, South Africa, winner on Sunday is?
I'm going to go with South Africa. I just think Wales have looked less than convincing at times, and the firepower of South Africa is going to, unfortunately, play them off the park. So, I'm going to go with the Southern Hemisphere side, unfortunately, this time. But although I would love to see a Northern Hemisphere final, I think I'm going to go with South Africa for sure.
Do you know what? I'm going to let my heart rule my head here. And I'm going to say, inspired by Alan Wood Jones, we've got an England-Wales final on the 2nd of November. But it would not shock me at all if it is literally the other way the Southern Hemisphere teams come out on top. Just super quick, again, conscious of your time and so much I would like to chat to you about, particularly briefly about Saracens, but just a brief note to the host nation. They've embraced the tournament. They went out gallantly to South Africa, who really kind of anacondaed the life out of them. But they've captured the minds of the rugby world. Now the rugby world needs to do something positive with this Japan side, who've proven they're a match on their day for anybody in world rugby.
Yeah, I think, you know, no one would have predicted this tournament not only to go, you know, as well as you know, being hosted in Japan, but the Japanese team themselves doing so incredibly well. I've got friends who have been over in Japan and supporting, and their time over there has been absolutely unbelievable, and they've been hosted so well by the Japanese people, and they've shown such kindness. And I think, you know, that only goes, you know, to replicate in the way that their team have been playing. They've got such pride around that team, and you know, you would, with the way that they've been playing, they've left everything on the field, and you know, the way they've been playing with such integrity, they've given 100%, and they've really just stuck their heads down and played rugby, exciting rugby too, running rugby that people want to see, which perhaps isn't played by a lot of teams at times. So no, it's you know, looking forward, you're going to want to see them playing in major games, and hope more than anything that world rugby can, you know, facilitate that and make that happen. And you know, I'm not sure what's happening with that you know, 12 top or the top tier one teams. I don't know what's currently happening, but I know there's comments around the world from, you know, from teams themselves, from key players in teams who are part of panels, saying, you know, we want Japan on the circuit, and they deserve to be there wholeheartedly. And if that means that they join the rugby championship and make a 5-team championship, then I think that would be fantastic. So, you know, I think no one thought that Argentina would join it, and they did. And, you know, they look as part of it as ever, and I hope Japan can do the same. And I mean, it just goes to show that the world rugby is more competitive than ever, and this tournament has gone to show it. So I think make that statement and introduce them to those key tournaments around the world.
They deserve it. They've earned their right. You're absolutely right. Coming back now, very briefly, domestically to your world. Sorry, start strong, defending champions. 5 wins from 5, but a tough game Saturday. It's second where you reside, but only on points difference against Gloucester in third. Big game. I'm sure everybody's keyed up and determined for this one. How's the training been? And mood of the camp, I'm guessing, as always, nothing but confident.
Yeah, we feel good. We've had a few tough games before us. I think we're on this will be our sixth game on the trot, so that's a six consecutive weekend. So yeah, we're looking forward to having a little bit of a break after this one, but obviously got to get the job done against Gloucester first. We are feeling good. We've had a couple of shaky games that have gone before us, but we've pulled through, which always gives us almost even more confidence to know that we have.
Once again, Sarah, the emblem of a world-class side. It's easy when momentum's with you and you're on fire and everything's magical. It's more key for me when you win ugly or when you win tough, both of which you've demonstrated in aplomb already in the early phases of the season.
Yeah, that's right. We went to Loughborough and we were 17-0 down at half time, and we went on to win that game 28-26. And you know, we had a few harsh words to say to each other, you know, after the game, and it was stuff that needed to be said. And you know, I dare say that we had got complacent, but certainly conversations weren't happening for that game that then happened afterwards. And you know, it took a little bit of looking around the room, probably looking at ourselves, and realizing actually what it takes or what it means to be champions of the league, and then to want to go and do it again. And you know, I think I had to full on task now if they weren't before.
With that being said, watch out Gloucester, but as you rightly say, they are a dangerous team in their own right. Second versus third in the Tyrrells Premier League there. Saracens defending champions. Can England become World Cup champions for the second time since 2003? England, Wales bidding for their first ever World Cup final appearance. So much amazing rugby ahead. Sarah, for me, thank you so much for your erudite analysis and your just sheer enthusiasm. Have a brilliant evening from me and all at Verum Sports, to all at Sarries, wishing you every continued success. Tell you what, I look forward to chatting to you again very soon.
Absolutely. Hopefully next week we've got those two Northern Hemisphere teams in the final,
Listen, everything's possible at this moment in time, and I'm enthused. And ultimately, I've said this before, it's becoming a bit of a cheesy cliche, but I genuinely believe, right here, right now, rugby has been the biggest winner of all.
Yeah, it's a cheesy one, and you hate to say it, but taking the game to places like Japan and it being taken up in the way it has is what it's all about. And you know, well, you could say seeing the world in union as well is fantastic, and there's no sport like it when those teams come together.
Do you know, honestly, it really does kind of sum up what we all cherish about rugby, whatever level that we've ever been involved with it. It has its own unique quality, always has done, always will do. Long may it continue, and long may it continue success for all at Saracens, at England, and indeed wherever you enjoy the great game of rugby union. Sarah, again, appreciate your help. Have a great evening.
Thank you. See you now, Tony.